people of the internet. How's it going today? How you doing? I'm Billy Bones, and this is a walk through the mind. A moment where we can sit back, hang out, discuss a handful of topics that have been bouncing around inside my head. See if we can't take some of these talking points and go out and share them and use them and see what we can't expand our minds on, expand our thought processes. And today, I'd like to talk about working around that governmental red tape, all of that, all the little intricacies of working within government through the private sector. And the catalyst for this idea, this topic, kind of didn't really start with, but it definitely was solidified by a podcast, Congressional Dish, hosted by Jen Briney. Episode 199 of hers, she was talking about surprise medical bills. She had a friend that ended up having to go to the hospital for emergency health care. And before insurance covered some of the bills, most of the bills, it was a $10,000 bill. And that's a chunk of change, man. That's, I don't have that kind of money sitting around. I don't want to go to the doctor and have to worry about that. That's kind of why we all have insurance, or at least supposed to, so we can cope with situations like that. But even still, in her podcast, her story, it was not a smooth ride. It was a rather bumpy ride. But we're looking at, you know, these hospital bills, just to start this all off with, you know, $10,000. What the heck? You know, what do we need? Why is the hospital bill so expensive? And I'll start you off now. I've got no real answers. Again, this is just talking points, you know, push off points, something for us to all spark the idea with. But we've all heard about the $15 Johnson & Johnson Band-Aid, or the, you know, the $7 cotton swab, or the $5 popsicle stick tongue depressor. And we sit there and we go, why am I going to this doctor? Why am I spending so much to cover, replace these things? There's no reason it should cost that much. And then you also have the doctors themselves that are charging ungodly amounts of money. But one thing you kind of got to look at is these doctors, you know, they don't get to keep all of that money. They gotta pay their little rent share, right? They're almost like independent people within the corporation. They little tattoo artists. You gotta rent your space. And they got things like malpractice insurance. You know, when you go there and they screw up, they have an accident. Right? They didn't do it on purpose. Accidents happen. Sometimes it's negligence, but general terms, we got accidents. You got to pay for their malpractice insurance. You know, when you get into a little fender bender in your car, let's just say it's on the expensive end and car insurance now has to pay out $10,000 to fix a car and send you to get your head checked or whatever or your neck checked because of whiplash or whatnot. Whereas with a doctor, the insurance company's not going to pay out just $10,000. If you get a life debilitating injury, you know, that's on the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars on the payout from insurance. And I would expect a deductible covering that much is not that cheap. But I guess we also have to pay the doctors, you know, they're there to treat us. Hopefully they all got A pluses in med school, but they've gone to med school for how many years, and what kind of student debt have they racked up? And what kind of knowledge have they obtained? You know, if we were looking at this from a capitalistic kind of perspective, they've earned that knowledge. They've worked really hard to obtain that and remember it, done their best to apply it. And as brought up in Congressional Dish, you know, we as the consumer, the customer to the doctor, we are definitely in between a rock and a hard place where we want to be healthy. We want to live a healthy life. We want to continue being you know, hopping and skipping through the fields of flowers and enjoying life. And so the doctor has a set of skills, a marketable set of skills that are worth how much to your life. Some people are willing to pay a lot more, and some people are just willing to pay everything. I mean, it becomes subjective on what our life is worth. But in step the government, enter stage left. We got the Affordable Care Act here in America. And in a nutshell, through my understanding, feel free to contact me and let me know what I got wrong. But in a nutshell, the ACA, Obamacare, was there to forcefully put everybody on insurance. So that way, the premiums would level out, insurance would pay a more flat rate, and be able to cover more things equally. But through the passing of the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, doctors and hospitals were required to obtain, keep, and record more information from the patient, kind of level it all out, so that way everything could be communicated properly. Well, this kind of put a burden on a lot of smaller doctors, smaller practices. I saw an orthotic doctor not too long ago who used to have his own small practice, but when the ACA kicked in, all the extra documenting, all the extra little nitpicky things, the new computers, the new computer systems, the programs and whatnot, they add up quick. And there's really only so much a small-time practitioner can handle. And so he ended up going with a bigger hospital to continue his practice, but he's now paying his dues, his rent space to that hospital. So he's stayed in business, but he hasn't gained any extra money. But his rates have gone up, again, to cover those extra things. But we also look at, you know, now we've got all this extra documentation. Now the doctor can't just have the one receptionist in him. He now has to have two or three receptionists to cover everything. You got the receptionist checking people in. And I use receptionist loosely. I know there's other terms. There's other job titles. But it just simple, again, broad brush. Paint with giant broad brushes here. So you got one receptionist checking customers in. You got the other receptionist filing the paperwork. And then you have another receptionist on the phone with insurance. And that kind of continues all day. And you got to pay those people somehow, right? Money doesn't just come out of nowhere. You got to charge your clientele. That's where the money comes from. Then you get however much money you can from the insurance company, cover all your bills. And, you know, again, it just becomes a quagmire of all this extra paperwork, all this back office stuff. And then you got to pay your practicing fees. You don't get to just become a doctor and set up shop. You have to, like a mechanic, you have to get your ASC certification. You have to apply for your business license and say that you're a legitimate doctor. You know what you're doing. And, you know, that, again, becomes very prohibitive for keeping things cheap and affordable. There's a story a while ago of this guy that wanted to offer cheap MRIs. How much does an MRI cost at the office? You know, if you go to the actual doctor's office, you might end up spending something like $20,000 or so, $24,000 according to this article. And this guy, where is he at? He wants to Virginia. North Carolina, North Carolina. He wanted to offer $500 MRIs. I have a buddy that is the MRI technician. All he does is run the machine, and then he takes the information, the printout, so to say, the results, and then he hands them to the doctor, and the doctor interprets them. Now, my buddy, not a certified MRI reader, he's just a certified MRI technician, just the guy that runs the machine. And he will tell me that through the amount of time that he sat there, he's got a good guess on what he's looking at. Again, he's not certified, so he's not allowed to say anything, because then that might fall under your malpractice. Well, he misdiagnosed it. He's just a technician. Well, he said something which gave the customer false hopes or false something. That's why we got the doctor. The doctor's paid to know these things. But I mean, what's to say you couldn't take a MRI readout and then take it to your doctor? You spend the $500, you get the reading. Maybe he does that. The guy who's doing the $500 reading knows what he's talking about, knows what he's looking at. But North Carolina shut him down. They said, you're not allowed to do that because you're going to put these big hospitals out of business. These big hospitals have registered these devices, these giant machines, and it's the state forcibly controlling supply and demand, maintaining that monopoly of healthcare. And if you look at it again under the jobs perspective, you know, gotta keep everybody employed. You can't just make things happen for the betterment of people. Can't have everybody being healthy. You gotta charge them somewhere. And there's also a story out of Kentucky. There's a church that was giving away used prescription prescription glasses. And they would get the prescription, right? They would look through the glasses and see what the prescription is, and then you would come in being homeless or poor. You don't have eyeglass and optical insurance, eye insurance. The optometrist running this in his free time, his spare time, volunteering his time to hand out these glasses. You come in, you sit down at the machine, you figure out what your prescription should be. And as long as the used eyeglasses were within 90% of your vision, he would just give them to him, right? People's vision changes throughout the years and you got to go upgrade your eyeglass prescription. And what do you do with your old ones? You can hang on to them. But he was taking these, he was handing them out to people. Now, I've heard that a public that can see well is able to educate themselves well, and a better educated public is a better collective of people, a better community, smarter community. But this Kentucky guy was shut down. He got in trouble because it wasn't new glasses. He wasn't charging for it. Just kind of doing his own thing. Same thing with that MRI guy. He was just doing his own thing, making it better for everybody. Now, we can sit here and look at it like, well, we don't want snake oil salesmen, right? We don't want those people out there being like, I've got the cure-all. I've got the chance, the ability to fix things, but you can't sue me because it's for the betterment of everybody. So you sign your little waiver, no malpractice lawsuits against me. I'm just here to help. But we need that price control. We need everybody to be certified, right? Again, we don't want those snake oil salesmen. So you join the collective, it's not necessarily a union, but it is a union of sorts, saying that we're the optometrists of America. We are the doctors of America. We are certified. We've gone to school. Look at my plaque. And so you get, these protections are there for a reason. You know, again, we don't want, it would suck to go into that MRI person that's figured it out, that's got the $500 one. This first guy, he's doing it right. He's doing it all for the better. But then you got some guy who's there just to make a quick buck. And he'll scan you and say, well, there's nothing there. Or he'll overprescribe something, get more money on the back end, weasel his way into your wallet, nickel and dime you. That's kind of why we got these regulations. We also got the regulations in there to maintain and keep prices, like I said, where they're at. So that way, not everybody, in theory, again, I'm not a professional in this, just talking points, just ideas. But it keeps everybody that is certified more or less on the same level. So you don't have people coming in and undercutting profits or greatly gouging people. Although if you're a good salesman, gouge away. But it's just all that red tape, all that make sure you do it right, you've done it right, adds up quick, adds up really fast. And, you know, if you want the perspective of a doctor on the ACA, Grimerica, episode 356 with Yared Vasquez, that's a perspective from a doctor who's, you know, been there before the ACA and is now practicing under the ACA. I felt that was a worthy conversation. If you wanted to kind of look at both sides, you look at the Congressional Dish side and you look at the Grimerica interview side with Yared, you kind of get that look. You kind of get that understanding. And then to kind of wrap it all up, the original idea years ago that kind of got me started down this red tape pathway, just working around it, comes from Canada, up in Toronto. There was a slope that would walk down to a community garden or something like that, and the people petitioned for stairs to be built, and the government was kind of dragging its feet, taking its time. You know, they have to hire not the landscapers, the people that use the sextants and whatnot. That's not even it. That's not the tool. But they go out, they measure the slope, and they look at you got to hire the environmental people to make sure, you know, we can cut down 7 trees, not 10 trees. And can't touch that tree because it's going to impact this bird's livability or squirrels or whatnot. But all they wanted was a set of stairs. Just something so that way when they're walking down this slope, they don't slip and fall. The story even says that one lady broke her wrist, fractured her wrist because she slipped down the hill. And this guy, he's like, city's taking too long, right? City's going to charge us $65,000 to $150,000 to build a set of stairs. We're not talking super elaborate stairs, but the government would have to be like, well, we need a handicap ramp and the stairs have to be X by X or X by Y. It's got to have 2 handles. It's got to have equal spacing between the whatevers. And this guy came in and for less than $600, he got some wood. He built a stairway with a handle and steps. And looking at the pictures, it looks pretty sturdy. And if you do it right, it should be just fine. But this guy didn't get a permit. This guy tried to do the good Samaritan, the good ethical thing, so that way everybody would be safe. You know, nobody's slipping, nobody's getting hurt. And the city said, no, you didn't get a permit for it. You didn't get the environmental study. You didn't hire these people. You didn't hire those people. And the city took down his $500 set of stairs. So now the stairs have, you know, the $600 has been taken away. The city has now paid those people to take down the stairs. And they're still going to pay people to file the permits to get all the measurements and whatnot done. Again, we don't want someone building a rickety set of stairs that, you know, in 2 weeks, the thing's going to fall apart. Or it's not going to last 20 years, but it was a solution to the problem. It was a fix. And, you know, again, we don't want those snake oil salesmen. But where's our equilibrium between doing the right thing, between the community policing itself more or less, the community working together to maintain and improve itself? You know, government's there for a reason. It's there for the greater collective. But in the case of the stairs, in my opinion, it's not always necessarily worth it if the stairs can be done right. If the stairs are done right. You know, how do we navigate around this red tape, this making sure that everything's right? If you ask me, more regulation definitely doesn't help with it, but the only way you fix the current regulations is by making new regulation to take out legislation. Kind of a, again, a teetering thing. But it's all kind of, you know, it's all kind of just trying to balance it out. These are all, again, just talking points, just ideas. Broad brush, something to share. And I'd like to thank you for listening. I'm Billy Bones, B-I-L-L-Y-B-O-N, the number 3-S. You find me on Twitter at Billy Bones. Got a website, billybones.com. It's not HTTPS, so it's a very super scary, unsafe website. I can't figure out how to get the whatever's going. As far as not being able to figure out things, I've got some iTunes reviews, but I can't figure out how to read those either. So maybe leave more and I'll be able to read them. Maybe you can hit me up, tell me what I'm doing wrong, tell me how to get the blinking 12 off of my VCR. So, but otherwise, hope you've enjoyed it. Share the show if you have. Running value for value. If you found value in the show, give it a show, share. Not here to prove a point. Just get the talking points. And also under cleaning up, you know, letting everybody know. A while ago, I did a interview with Hog Story, hogstory.net. Sat down, had a fun conversation with them. I apologize for my audio quality. I'm still a rookie, still figuring all this out. But go there, listen to that, learn more about me, learn more about them. But I'll talk to you next week. Or let me guess.